The National Council on Aging estimates 1 in 10 older adults experiences elder abuse. Even more concerning, the Center on Elder Abuse estimates only 1 in 24 cases of elder abuse are ever reported. More and more of us are reaching senior citizen age. That means elder abuse will likely increase. It's up to all of us to be a part of the solution. Trent Carter is an adult advocate for elder and vulnerable adults with UCDD.
I think some people have a general idea, but I think the general public is not aware of really what all that entails.
The most common thing we might think about is actual abuse, and that happens. But the problem goes much deeper and has many other facets, doesn't it?
It does. And you're right. We focus on, you know, abuse in the physical sense of the word. But abuse can be financial abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse. And a lot of times there's several of those things going on at the same time. And that's what, you know, continues to perpetuate the issue of what's going on and makes that person being abused, you know, it's coming at them from so many different angles. They don't know what to do.
Do we understand the scope in that? I would imagine it is a problem that goes unreported in many cases.
It is. It is definitely, at least statewide, we have made great strides in raising awareness and people reporting it more, but they say, based on their statistics, it's still underreported in the state of Tennessee. And so everywhere I go, you know, I give people that national, you know, that APS hotline number, and recommend that they, you know, they report any abuse, neglect, or exploitation of an elderly person or a vulnerable adult. And Tennessee is a mandatory reporting state. And so sometimes,
meaning what?
Meaning that if you suspect that, that you are supposed to call, you're supposed to call APS and make that report, whether you have all of the facts or not. And that's probably what stops people. But there are people like myself that will get these reports. And, you know, if I don't have all the information, I make best efforts to get that information. You know, if I don't have an exact location or a phone number, you know, I do what I can send letters if I have an address or not a phone number or vice versa. So efforts are made, even if you do not have all the information. It's up to us as the advocates to put the pieces together and hopefully help these people get out of the situation they're in.
How do we explain the psychological part of someone who chooses to abuse, let's just use an elderly person, for example. And I guess what I'm asking is, you know, we might think of domestic violence in that, you know, it's trying to control that person. It's a love relationship that has gone in a bad way. Maybe the psychological part of what's involved with the abuse of an elder is maybe not, it's not as easily seen for a lot of us.
There can be very similar signs, I guess, if you're making the comparison between domestic violence and elder abuse, even if it's not in the physical sense, because a lot of times domestic violence is the same thing. You know, when we hear the word violence or abuse, we automatically think of something physical. But there, like I stated, there are definitely lots of different ways to abuse a person. And so that victim that's being abused, you know, they're going to, you know, psychologically, they're going to feel, even if this person is taking advantage of them in one or multiple ways, they're going to feel that's the only person, because that's what that person does, is they make them trust them, depend on them wholeheartedly. So they'll isolate them from friends and family and anybody that would, you know, would report this abuse and neglect. And so they try to just isolate them, and it's just them and the abuser. And that's what continues to perpetuate that problem until someone is able to intervene, whether that's me, APS, law enforcement, a church member, a friend, you know. And so that's the goal here, is that intervention to happen at some point.
Trent Carter is our guest. We're talking about the response to elder and vulnerable adult abuse. It happens more often than you might think. We continue. Trent Carter is our guest. How often is money at the root of these abuse issues?
probably the most common denominator is money in all of these situations. And the sad part is sometimes it's not as much as you would think that it's worth going after that money, but someone that's in control and wants that money for their own personal gain, no matter how much, if it's $5, $500, $5,000, they're going to squeeze every penny they can for their own gain because they care about themselves and themselves alone.
So this is taking advantage of, again, let's use elderly, taking advantage maybe to get a Social Security check or to get some kind of pension or something along that line?
Correct. It can be something as immediately tangible as a monthly Social Security check, but other times it will be, I know this person is in really poor health and they may not be around much longer, and so I'm going to worm my way into their life, become, you know, a really big support system, whether that's, you know, a family member or someone that is just purely this is what they do, take advantage. So they befriend them and their health is poor. Maybe they're even, their cognitive health is declining and they end up writing that person into their will, giving all of their assets to that person, their house, you know, large sums of savings, retirement or whatever it be. I mean, and so it is kind of a game to some people. And it's really sad.
I guess that's where this whole that reporting these things, maybe you don't think about the need for you to do that, but it might be very obvious to someone that, you know, who is this person that has suddenly become the trusted right arm of my church friend or my neighbor or whatever, and where you might have a question and should report it.
Absolutely, yeah. And they... That's why these people isolate them, of course, but that's why it's important to report and important to pay attention to, like you said, if there's a person, like, who is this person you just met? And half the time, it's either a family member or it's someone that they meet on Facebook, you know, because Facebook, it's so easy to make a free account, and people, you know, elderly people are not able to tell, you know, whether that's a fake profile or not. And they, you know, they just assume that generation, you know, through no fault of their own, that they are very trustworthy. And unfortunately, because of issues like this, you know, the younger you get, I think the less trust you have in people. And I myself can be cynical like that, but I think the generation right now that's being taken advantage of, they're very trustworthy of people. And so they don't require as much, I guess, proof of identity to be able to trust someone. If there's just someone that is being kind to them, complimenting them, being some sort of emotional or physical support system, that's good enough for them.
Now, I find that surprising. I would not have thought that. But again, it opens up, you know, a whole new line of thinking that, you know, these adults are on social media and are, they can potentially be scammed.
And they are every day. I've lost track of how many I hear about that have given away their entire savings to their boyfriend that they are engaged to that lives in Egypt, but they have been in a terrible accident and they need thousands upon thousands of dollars to pay off their medical bills, and they send it. And, you know, they can take it a step further. There's romance scams are definitely big, and unfortunately sometimes the scammee becomes the scammer because the abuser has gained so much of their trust that then they can suggest something to them that would sound outlandish to an outsider. But if they trust that person, or they're like, well, I trust this person, this is a good idea, and that person then starts being the scammer, so to speak. There is a term known as money mule, where, you know, this person is already sending, you know, thousands of dollars worth of gift cards to the scammer. And then this scammer is sending them, you know, money overseas. And they're scamming some other elderly individual, and they're not even fully aware of that. And that's, again, where that intervention comes into play. And that's where banks and law enforcement and even the U.S. Postal Service comes into play. Because we think of things... So many things being digital now that we track things digitally, but it's still people using paper and letters and using the mail system is still very common, you know, especially because that generation, they're more used to that. And so that's still a very common way to scam people out of their money.
Are those who are the victims of some type of elder abuse, is it most often someone they know?
I would say yes. It is either a family member or a close friend or a friend of a family member. That more often than not, it's definitely someone that they do actually know, which is how, you know, that can start. You know, they already know them, and so they're going to trust them to some extent, and all they got to do is say the right things to get them to trust them more.
Which also, I guess, makes it more difficult in terms of reporting, because one could not imagine that this grandson would do this to his grandmother, or a niece would do this to an aunt, or, you know, those types of things.
Correct. Yeah, and it's, I think people tend to jump to the worst case scenarios. So it's not always thousands upon thousands of dollars of savings, and it's not always, oh, with this grandson, granddaughter, daughter, son is taking money for something like drugs. You know, it's not always something extreme like that. It could be, you know, $10 here, $10 there. You send someone to the grocery store to get you $150 worth of groceries, but they bring you $50 worth of groceries but have no change. And so you give them cash. There's no way to really track that. There's no receipt. And so it can be something small that just builds into something bigger. It can be something big, but it's not always the worst case extreme scenario, which can sometimes be equally as hard to identify, though. It's equally as important. I think, you know, a dollar, an elderly person or vulnerable adult that's been scammed out of a dollar is just as disgusting as someone's been scammed out of $1,000.
Trent Carter is our guest. We're talking about the response of the community at large to the issue of elder and vulnerable adult abuse. Our conversation continues with Trent Carter as we talk about the abuse of the elderly, vulnerable adults. It can be physical. It can be emotional. It can be mental. It can be scams in terms of money and those types of things. Trent, when someone reports something that they are suspicious about, what happens in the process to investigate that?
So they are going to call APS, which they can either call the APS hotline, they can submit the report online, or even mail a letter. But typically it's calling. You know, I think that's where most of the reports come from. And there are intake counselors that are available 24/7 to take those calls. And they will gather, you know, basic demographical information about the alleged victim and as much information as you're able to give them about the alleged perpetrator. And any sort of, you know, details a narrative of the alleged abuse. And then they determine whether that fits APS's criteria for investigation. And their criteria is going to be abuse, neglect, exploitation of a caregiver, whether that is a paid caregiver or an informal kind of, whether that's a child or some kind of guardian taking care of them. And then they investigate financial exploitation of government funds, being like a Social Security check. But if it does not meet one of those criteria, then they typically send what's known as a screen out. And so they're literally screening that out to other agencies. They send that to local law enforcement, to the local district attorney's office, and any other related agency that fits that profile of what is being reported. And then from there, it's up to those agencies to determine whether it meets their individual criteria and if they can investigate and help in some way. And the goal, you know, APS's goal is not always, I think, the way people think of DCS, where they're removing a child out of an abusive home. You know, the goal is if they're in a domestic situation with somebody, they want to remove them, but this is an adult, you know, that is allowed to make their own decisions. So no, they can't force them out of the situation. They do their best to make them aware of what's happening. But they always have the option, you know, and there are those situations when someone is, you know, they've got declining mental health or cognitive health, and they're really not able to make those sound decisions. And if that's determined, then they have routes they can take. But But most of the time, they're not able to force them into anything. And sometimes they do just decide to stay because one reason or another. They're like, well, that's my baby. That's my kid. You know, I know that they're taking advantage of me, but I can't just leave them without. And so it's up to service providers such as myself to, you know, to intervene and get in those situations. And they can help, whether that's relocation or just kind of getting them back on their feet. Because, you know, our goal is to keep them independent and not dependent on people that are taking advantage of them.
We see, for example, when someone, a child, is the victim of abuse, that there can be criminal charges involved. Can there be criminal charges involved with an elderly person, for example, that's
there
the victim of
abuse? There absolutely can. There are plenty of elder abuse laws, and I will not bore you with the Tennessee annotated codes, even if I did know them. But there are certain parameters for them to bring charges to someone. There has to be so much financial loss, and if it is some kind of physical abuse, there has to be a way to prove that physical abuse. And that can prove difficult sometimes. You know, people that, like myself, that are fired up about the issue, they're like, well, you got to charge this person, you got to take action, you got to get in there, you got to get them out. But they're humans, they're people, they're adults, once again, that make their own decisions. And they also, once again, they can voluntarily decide to not press charges. If law enforcement gets involved and they think that they should press charges, they will tell them that, but they always have the option.